This is the son of PCJ.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
A Cambridge University historian said recently in an interview that if the world were to end, the Swiss would only realize it 3 days later. This tendency to smugness and looking away is an old phenomenon, and one can argue if Swiss neutrality is cause or effect. In the bipolar world after World War II, it didn't really matter, because Switzerland was firmly democratic, largely in favor of free trade, and its stout national defense and anti-Soviet stance outweighed any misgivings about standing aside from conflicts. On the contrary, there were enough world leaders who appreciated the presence of an honest broker when it came to crises, be it between Iran and the US, Cuba and the US, or even Britain and Argentina over the Falkland Islands. Scroll forward to today. Switzerland is just one of the normally ineffectual members of the UN and obviously outside the Security Council. It gets pilloried in the human rights body it helped to found in Geneva for spurious misdemeanors, which pass as courant normal in 90% of UN members. And in the wonderfully collective and centralistic Europe of the EU, Switzerland is a rogue state because it doesn't want to join this bankrupt club, not least because there would be no chance of winning a membership referendum. This, despite widespread government and civil service hopes that Switzerland will one day join, allowing its ministers, politicians, and diplomats to imbibe in the sumptuous watering holes of Brussels if they don't get mugged first. These international dreams partly explain the pathetic, weak-kneed performance of sundry Swiss governments since the fall of the Berlin Wall. In the 1990s, Switzerland was set up by the Clinton administration for its alleged role in World War II. With a trade war in the air, the Swiss government let the Swiss banks settle the tab. Over $1,000 million, which unfortunately lined lawyers rather than victims' pockets. In an act of contrition, the Swiss government commissioned a mammoth history of Switzerland in the Second World War, showing the downside in neon lights, the upside was missing, as well as a mention that Germany could have throttled Switzerland any time within 2 weeks by merely cutting off coal supplies. Be that as it may, as an aside, a Swiss ambassador dealing with dormant funds said it wasn't about money, but more money. Which brings us to today. The United States and Europe need money, lots of it. Switzerland still has some, despite already collecting taxes for the EU and paying for EU Eastern European development, plus kowtowing to Uncle Sam by violating banking secrecy and selling thousands of largely bona fide American customers of Swiss banks down the river. And the woman who is this year's Swiss president and finance minister has even spoken about giving up banking secrecy within Switzerland, i.e. any authority can snoop around your account, even if you've paid all your taxes. Switzerland has now agreed a double taxation agreement with Germany, giving Germany a lump sum and a percentage of all bank holdings in Switzerland of German citizens, ditto for the United Kingdom. As these agreements have been in the air for months, the not too dumb have had ample time to shift funds to Singapore or the Caymans before the agreements come into force in January 2013. And I bet these clients are not scared by the minister's threat that anyone emptying their accounts in Switzerland will be reported to her and she'll tell the Germans and the British. Meanwhile, a fifth to a half of Swiss banking staff will lose their jobs shortly, while the bank whiz kids in New York, London and Hong Kong are laughing themselves silly. Peter Haller for Switzerland in Sound.
The Asia-Pacific is one of the most vibrant regions in the world. Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and I hope that you can join me weekly for PCJ Radio's new news magazine, Focus Asia-Pacific. Focus Asia-Pacific each week will bring you the top stories from the Asia-Pacific in business, politics, and culture. Focus Asia-Pacific, putting the focus on the Asia-Pacific.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 99.55 kHz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kHz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet. This is PCJ Radio.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
There are many visitors, obviously, who come to Switzerland. This is a very popular destination for visitors from all over the world. Many, many ways to see this country. And, of course, the classic way would be by train or by boat. Switzerland has probably Europe's best organized public transport system. But you know, there's another way to see Switzerland, and that is from the bird's eye view. No, I don't mean in a commercial airliner flying over the country. I mean getting into a small plane or a helicopter, or how about a hot air or even gas balloon, doing it that way. We have the man with all the answers how we best do that. He is Felix Kieser, who is the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland. If he doesn't know about this, then nobody does. Mr. Kieser, welcome to Switzerland in Sound. First of all, quite a basic question here. We assume that it's fairly easy to see Switzerland by small plane, helicopter, or balloon. Is that in fact the case? Is it easy to do?
Yes. Affirm, as the pilots would say. We have got quite a few airfields in Switzerland, more than 40 small fields, and whether it be within the Alps or further down, we have a lot of occasions to do that.
This, of course, from a pilot's point of view, is a really, it's a challenging country with all of the mountains. We have special weather patterns here, microclimates. These pilots must be pretty good. They're pretty well trained. We're not talking about the old barnstorming pilots of years ago. These guys know what they're doing.
Yes, and we have just to demonstrate what it means. We have special ALP instruction lessons that all pilots that fly in Switzerland have to undergo, and the foreign pilots who come to Switzerland, they do first get instructions how to fly within the Alps and into the Alps in case they do not perform that in their own country.
So anyone who will take a small plane ride or a helicopter ride or a balloon, they can rest assured they're in the best possible hands.
I can assure you, yes, we are very regulated. That is certainly the case.
And, of course, here in Switzerland, we have to remember that there's a militia army or air force. There's a semi-professional air force in this country. I imagine some of your membership and some of these pilots probably also are military pilots at the same time. They know the mountains. They know the terrain very well.
Exactly. That's quite the case. A lot of them come from the military, are still in the military. All the basic training was in the military.
they don't get any better. I've seen some of these guys in action. They it's amazing. Also on the internet, you can see some breathtaking videos of Swiss Air Force pilots and what they do. It's absolutely incredible, and anyone interested can find that. Mr. Kieser, let's look at the flights themselves. I mean, Switzerland is a small country, but extremely diverse. If we look at the geography, can you say which are the most popular flights among visitors to this country?
Of course, to the Alps or within the Alps, but of the other places, very nice to see. But most popular, to answer your question, yes, these are the Alps. And within the Alps, it's probably the Matterhorn, the old Matterhorn, though there are many other places that are spectacular at the Matterhorn.
I can imagine around Lucerne, it would be the Pilatus, and in the Bernese Oberland, it would be the Jungfrau, and so on, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And the advantage is if you come out from here, then you order your way along to the Matterhorn. Well, if we stay with the Matterhorn, then you have a spectacular scenery all the way up there.
Is it possible, incidentally, to do mountain hopping trips, for example, to go over the mountains to neighboring Italy or perhaps to Germany or France? Is that also done?
Certainly. And one popular route is coming from here, the countryside, going to the Alps and then take a break in Sion, for example, or Geneva, and then go back. Meaning taking a break, landing at an airport there and having what we used to call the $100 hamburger in the States to go back.
A very good friend of mine was a glider pilot here in Switzerland. He did also motor gliders. And I had some wonderful times with him. It's so breathtaking, and we mustn't forget that in addition to the classic small motorized planes, also gliders are fit into this. So we talk about small motor aircraft, light aircraft, in other words. We talk about gliders, helicopters, balloons. This is quite an assortment of hardware here. Can you say, Mr. Kieser, which type of aircraft is best suited for which type of sightseeing?
Well, I would just start with a very good idea. You just mentioned that the sailplane, it's just that it's only for one person that can do it. So you cannot go together with your friends, but you have the pilot and yourself. That is really something special to glide among the mountains, as you just pointed out. Then, of course, there are the other means, the other aircrafts and balloons, the small ones, the bigger ones, from the small one that is probably the most popular, the Piper and the Cessnas and so on. But you have the small helicopters also that are more affordable than the big ones. And then you have the balloon, the hot air or even gas, which has become rare. But that is something very spectacular to do and really amazing, the balloon rides.
Well, the balloon, of course, that must be the great classic way. I mean, we go back to the grand days of the grand tour, seeing the mountains by balloon. You bring your champagne along and you sit and just look at God's country. You need some time for a balloon trip, don't you?
Exactly. You need the weather, pilot and time, and then if you talk about the old times, we have to mention the gas balloon, which has, as I said, become very rare, but also very expensive, we have to be honest.
Let's look at the cost for a moment. Does one have to see his banker first before you go on one of these trips, or is it affordable?
No, I think it's sufficient to consult your family and take it along. So we are talking from, I would say, 100 francs up, of course. If you have 100 francs for a helicopter, that will be a short jump you do. But with the four-seater small airplane with 100 francs, you do already a 30-minute trip. Mm-hmm. But I would say from 150 francs on, you have a beautiful sight. And as far as ballooning is concerned, I would add up that to 200. But the average is for the motor aircraft. For a sightseeing into the Alps, I would say 250 or 200 to 250 about an average with a helicopter. It adds that up to, or goes up to 350, and the balloon also around that.
Now, are these half-hour segments we're talking about or full hour?
The average one I was mentioning now, I counted an hour. That, I think, is an average of a sightseeing flight.
Well, that's a pretty fair
ride with a balloon, yes.
Yeah, that's a good flight. Incidentally, before I forget, years and years ago, as a young reporter for the International Radio, I got an interesting assignment. You will know the name T. Rufer, one of Switzerland's most famous glacier pilots. I think he used to have a Piper Cub or something along
most
that line.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, and he would actually land and take off on glaciers. Is this still done?
Yes.
You can still do that?
Of course, yes. And that is really amazing to do that, yes.
Yeah.
There are not so many glacier pilots. They demand a lot of experience. Lot of experience, and there are not so many glaciers again who are allowed to land on. Mm. But that is something really special.
And that's a very high specialty too. I mean, you really have to know what you're doing.
Exactly, and it's still done. Yes,
yeah.
It needs a lot of knowledge and a lot of skill.
It's getting exciting. I'd like to get one of these flights myself again. I have one last question for you, Mr. Kieser. What about private pilots who are licensed in their home countries? And they say, well, you know, that would be a great idea, but I can fly my own plane. Can they do that here?
Yes. Most pilots fly internationally, fly in other countries, so they are allowed to do that. And the international regulation has been valid for since the beginning of flying almost. There have been agreements. So that means that we can fly into and out of other countries with foreign licenses, most of the pilots. Of course, they're also licensed that only apply for the home country. Then what I would recommend to foreign pilots, if they want to do it commercially and add and make really make it attractive and go to public and announce themselves, then I would recommend they check the validity of their license and their activity with FOCA, our national regulator.
You mean if a commercial pilot wants to work as a commercial pilot here, this requires a special agreement. But an ordinary sport or private pilot, as we understand it, the classic Cessna or Tri-Pacer or Piper Flyer or Mooney, he can come here with his national license and it will be recognized.
Of course, yes.
Sounds very exciting. I used to fly a lot with my father. Back where I grew up, and I understand you were there too, I grew up in New Jersey, outside New York, and you lived in Long Island on the other side.
Exactly, that's where I got my first flying lessons, and my license, by the way.
Isn't that something? It really is a small world. We used to fly out of sometimes Teterboro.
Teterboro.
When it was still a very small, quiet airport. Now it's very commercial. And then Morristown. You probably know Morristown.
Yes, of course. When you mention it now, I remember that it was part of my lessons, one of my landings. Yes.
Those were the days when you actually were allowed to fly right over Manhattan. I think that's not done anymore.
I still could do that. Yes, I still could do that.
Yeah, but
flying out of Long Island, yes.
I think, though, you need permission and clearance before you can do that these days. It's,
of course you have. Of course, and radio communication is part of the flying.
That's right. That's right. Felix Kieser, the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland, with some expert, well-informed information for those who would like to see Switzerland from up there. On your next visit, some great ideas. We'll also have a few links for you here on the website. Mr. Kieser, thank you very much, and of course I have to wish you happy landings.
Okay, I thank you very much, and wish everybody flights over and into Switzerland.
Unforgettable it will be. Thank you so much.
The term bed and breakfast
will not be strange to anyone in the English-speaking world, because the B&B phenomenon originally came from England, if I'm well informed, and it spread all over the world in English-speaking countries. But the bed and breakfast concept in Switzerland is relatively new. And we are talking to somebody today near the northern Swiss city of Basel, the northwestern Swiss city of Basel on the Rhine River, who knows a lot about this. It's Dorette Provost, who runs her own B&B agency called Bed and Breakfast Agency Basel. But she's also affiliated with a grouping called Bed and Breakfast Switzerland. And this is the national organization of people who are in this particular business. There's one thing we have to point out. Historically, Switzerland or Switzerland's hotels have always provided breakfast. It's included in the hotel room. But there must be other advantages. How do the advantages stack up in Switzerland as compared to the conventional hotel?
There are two advantages. One is, of course, the price, because the price in hotels is very high in Switzerland.
Especially in big city areas.
Yes, sometimes it's also a good quality you get for a good price, but some of the people do not have so much money. And
they're not all on expense accounts.
That's true. And so they need to stay in a cheaper place. And the other advantage is that you stay in a guest family, usually in a Swiss guest family, and so you can see how Swiss people live. Usually B&B is to stay in a family, sharing the bathroom, sometimes sharing the kitchen.
Of course, there's no obligation to get too close to a family. If you prefer to keep a certain amount of personal distance, that's up to you. A good host will certainly realize that and respect one's wishes. It's just a different atmosphere from a hotel, and as you say, cheaper as well. But when we use the word cheap, we're not talking about poor quality. Switzerland has a long tradition for fine hotels, and also the situation at home. People keep their homes clean, and they keep them well ordered. But still, to ensure this, you must have a standard that you try to adhere to.
We have quality controls. That means that we started giving stars to our guest families, and it's not the same as in a hotel where you can have up to 5 stars. Bed and breakfast places have only up to 4 stars. For having 4 stars, you need to have a luxury place. It must be a really nice place.
Even the location has to be particularly
nice. Yes, and you need to have a private bathroom, a luxury bathroom. Mm-hmm. And for 1 star, that's a very simple place. So
almost like a hostel type of thing.
Maybe like kind of hostel. But most of our places are 3 stars.
So let's say 3 stars would be it'd be like living in your own home, back home, more or less.
It's more or less like being private, yes.
I'm curious about breakfast. For some people who consider it their most important meal of the day, it would be nice to know what breakfast means in Switzerland. Yes. Is it the so-called continental breakfast with a croissant and coffee or tea, or is it more substantial?
No, but what we ask for is a Swiss breakfast, so that means bread and butter and marmalade. But if you want to have 3 stars, you need to serve a rich breakfast. So if you stay once in a place with 3 stars and they do not serve you a rich breakfast, then you have to call me.
Okay. Can you be a little bit more precise about the difference in price between a really nice, comfortable, let's say 3-star B&B establishment and a comparable hotel?
It depends where you stay. If you stay up in the mountains in September or July, when there is a high season, you certainly pay much more than if you would stay in a not-so-touristic place in Switzerland. So you have to look on our website. I think it starts at around 30 Swiss francs a night with breakfast, but it goes up to maybe 100. It depends where you are and how luxury the place is.
Just like hotels.
Bed and breakfast is not always cheap, but it's always nice and it's personal.
What about the length of stay? I mean, is there a minimum requirement of 2, 3, 4 days, or can you go to a B&B on a daily basis?
With my bed and breakfast agency in Basel, there is a minimum stay of 2 nights. But all the other places, there you can stay also 1 night.
Are reservations always necessary?
It's recommended, because many places, especially the nice places, are booked very fast. So it's better to make reservation in advance.
Dora Provost, thank you very much for telling us about the joys, the advantages, and the fun of staying in Swiss bed and breakfast establishments instead of the classic hotel. For Switzerland in Sound, from Basel, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.